Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak Appears.
Brother!
This is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paladin.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host,
Brad. Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
Susie Q here with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican, built tough for all situations. Go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. And we're back. Hey, welcome back to another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Pal and Fin Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dustin Nichols, back with you again for another episode. Not too much going on. I mean, just, I don't know, same old, on the water. definitely redfish are really, really picking up here in my area. You know, we've had some recent rains to help out. We've had quite the dry spell going on, but had some recent rains kind of cooled the water temps down and everything, got the fish moving a little bit more than what they had been. It was, had been a really early bite, you know, get on the water before sunrise. And then, you know, within 2 hours, you want to be off the water. It'd been like brutally hot, but yeah, plenty of water time lately. Stoked for the fall season to be coming up. If we can just get through this dang hurricane season without taking a blow, it'd be good to go. So with that, that's enough of that little just talk of what's going on. Got a good show tonight. Got a dude from Northeast Florida, you know, my old stomping grounds, grew up over there, fished some, a lot of areas down that way. When I lived over there in St. Simons Island in Brunswick, Georgia, Southeast is close to my heart. So I'm stoked to have another Duval angler on here. We got Sandy Stark on here tonight. We're going to bring him in. All right. What's going on, Sandy?
Hey, Dustin, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Excited to talk some fish stories with you.
Sounds good. You said Duval just right, too.
Duval. Yeah, yeah. Damn dirty Jaguars. Oh, man. Yeah, Duval. Yeah. You know, I grew up, you know, over that way. I moved away from Jacksonville as I, you know, entered my teenage years. But I remember a place called Camp Alamakani. You remember that place?
Oh yeah,
right there on the pass by the jetties. The jetties,
Fort, yeah, right by the Fort George area.
George, yeah, inlet.
Still popular.
Where the ferry comes across, and you can get dumped over there. There's a really good seafood place there across on the Mayport side. I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, their fried shrimp is just piled high, and it's pretty dang tasty. But yeah, I remember Camp Alamakani. I remember I was like 10 years old. My dad ran the sound for a band called Harley Hoof.
Okay.
And they were playing at Camp Alamakani. And I remember sneaking that old champagne of beer and having me take me a swig out that old Miller High Life when I was like 10 years old. But I remember they had some of the best clam chowder that I've ever had there at Camp Alamakani.
Yeah, that's a great fishing area too.
Oh, I imagine. I bet it could be. You know, back in the day, you know, running back and forth to the, you know, the jetties there, you could drive on the beach and drive up. But coming across all those bridges, there was always people lined up, you know. And I was a little prankster when I was younger. So I was like, man, just think if we were like driving and I had a cane pole and I was smacking everybody. Pop, 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 pop. Smacking everybody's rod is ripped by. I was a little prankster when I was younger, but I always used to think, man, how funny would that be? Just sit there and just because they were like lined up, like just stacked in there. But yeah, man, I love that area over there.
We have plenty of good fisheries all north and south of there too.
All over, yeah. All down towards Palm Coast, St. Augustine, Pond, all that down there. Yeah, very good stuff. Right.
Variety. You've got everything from rocks and docks to oyster beds to flats, you name it.
You name it. It's there. Backwaters, all that good stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, some good tidal backwaters. You can get down in there. Man, there's some good stuff down there. We got one of our Jackson guys, Bart Schwab, guides down there out of St. Augustine.
Yeah.
Yep, he's a good dude.
Yeah, I run into him quite often.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine. I imagine so. Yeah, he's all over the place over there. Man. Dang. So yeah, we're gonna talk some good stuff here. What give everybody a you know little backstory on yourself, you know, born and raised, you know, Jacksonville, your move away or did anything else? Let everybody know how you got into fishing, what led you into that plastic boat, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Yeah, so I started fishing at a young age, and I can thank my dad for that. I was talking to my older brother. I have an older brother and a younger sister, and we estimated that my dad took my brother and I fishing about 40 weeks or 40 weekends a year, you know, typically a Saturday, but about 40 out of 52, he didn't do as much with guys his age because he wanted to do stuff with us. So we went hunting and fishing a lot. And he took us around to all the freshwater lakes that you and I were talking about earlier. So we started off primarily bass fishing, and we were hitting Orange Lake and Lac Lusa, yeah. Santa Fe, Crescent, the St. John's River, et cetera. But he, at the time when we first started fishing as a family, we had a John boat. So we would drop the John boat in the intercoastal. We liked Matanzas area a lot. Did everything from back then. We weren't using artificial as much. We would typically troll bucktail jigs and fish with live shrimp.
Yeah,
but
we did that back in the day too. You know, coming out of fishing Cumberland, Christmas Creek area, uh-huh. The big stick floats and the pin number nines and 209s. And then I got tired of throwing them. So I would bring my bass rods out there and throw artificials and whoop up on my uncles and them, you know, cause I was just like, nah, I'm not having all this big old rod with this Dacron and the line dressing and all this mess, you know, back in the day, that's how the old timers did it though. You know?
Oh yeah.
It was like crazy. You think about what our equipment we have now to what they had back then. Just,
I know.
So yeah, so you same rite of passage. You come up, you know, fishing with your dad and everything, and you just such a great area over there, anyways. Just with all the water you have and the lakes nearby with the St. John's and all the just such good stuff over there. So you came up through. I mean, 40 weekends out of the year. That's pretty. That's a lot of time on the water. So you got to hone your craft at an early age.
Oh, yeah. I have to admit, though, I was the one that they had to pry out of bed, and I would get up, get dressed, and get in the back seat of the station wagon and go back to sleep until we got to the destination. Then I woke up again. So I wasn't much good until we actually were ready to launch and head out. So, but yeah, those are special memories. And
for sure.
You know, that's part of why I still fish today is to kind of, you know, relive what was so special in my childhood. And, you know, I have two sons now, and they like to fish. They don't like to fish near as much as me, which mm-hmm. is understandable, especially yeah. at their age. Yeah. But they will go with me, and you know, they're starting to like it more and more, I think, as time goes on. So you know, I think it's a great sport to do as a family.
Yeah.
So
for sure. Definitely. And how long have you been fishing out of a kayak?
Well, out of a kayak, it's kind of a funny story. So I have a good buddy, his name's Lamar, and he had a boat and a couple kayaks, and he talked me into going with him, Clapboard Creek, you know, right off Hexer Drive. He talked mm-hmm. me into going kayak fishing. I used his son's kayak, and we went out and we did really well, and I enjoyed it. You know, we were using, I think, jig and paddle tails primarily back then. And I guess that was probably like 6 to 7 years ago. So not too long ago, actually, but about 6 or 7 years ago. But I was hooked,
right,
so to speak,
sure.
when yep. when he took me. I said, this is great. And so I was just talking to him a few days ago, as a matter of fact, and I was trying to recount how long it was before I got my own kayak. And he goes, well, you only went with me one time, and then you had a new kayak the next time we went. So
yeah, that speaks volumes right there for anybody out there that might be your first time listening and you know, thinking about jumping into kayak fishing. I mean, that's it right there. I mean, that just so many things you see on the water that you would never see if you were not in that kayak.
Oh yeah.
There's so
oh,
much yeah. cool stuff I see all the time. It's insane.
Yeah. So I got that and just trial and error, you know, I made a lot of mistakes early on. It was my first kayak was a paddle kayak. And, you know, I'd pretty much moved from fishing live bait, either freshwater with shiners or saltwater yeah. with live shrimp, mud minnows, finger mullet. I've kind of moved into artificial only over the years. And so I was artificial only when I started with the kayak, and it was kind of tough for me picking that paddle up, paddle, put it down, throw. So it was tough trying to do the artificial game out of the kayak, but you know, I got better and better. And then I finally pulled the trigger on a pedal kayak, and that was a game changer for me. Fishing artificial 100% yeah. of the time.
The hands-free made a
oh yeah. It was huge difference. This huge difference, right?
So you'd be surprised, like starting out in a paddle kayak. I started out in a Perception, a Pescador.
Oh yeah. I
like know a that 12.5, the little scooped out little seat, your rear end got wet all the time in it. You know, I mean, but that thing would move, you know, and it had a little tank well, you know, you could put a little crate back there. But it was yellow. I know I've told this story, I don't know how many times, but you know, I was like, man, this thing needs some paint on it. So I like did like a black fade from the front to the middle. And I used to car top, and all my buddies at work be like, man, what you doing rolling up with that bruised banana on top of the car? So it was the bruised banana. So I was dubbed the bruised banana.
And yeah, you know, bananas that little, and fishing don't go well.
I know they don't, but dude, I used to put the smack down out of that kayak. We get some really cool, like, wintertime, like, as long as we don't get a lot of rain and get a lot of release of the water out of some reservoirs, some of our rivers on the upper end of our bay systems turn on like crazy for trout in the wintertime. You just get holed up. And this one river gets real popular, and there'll be 75 boats launching out this one ramp. And here I am dragging up, paddling with a kayak with a stringer full of trout and three redfish and, like, four flounder. And they're like, oh, my God, boy. You caught them off that there kayak? Yeah, sure did. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, you know. You sneak up on them. But yeah,
absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of things. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff that's happened in that kayak. You would never, never would have saw it in a boat.
And yeah, I think that's one of my main reasons that I like fishing out of kayaks is the stealth factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still fish out of buddies' boats all the time. Yep. And you know, I can fish a dock twice as thoroughly as we can out of a boat.
Oh yeah.
It's just a fact. You can just fish it better. You can sneak up on them. There's lots of advantages.
A whole bunch. I mean, we could go on and on talking about that. But yeah, just, you know, starting out a paddle kayak. I mean, there's so many ways you learn to grab that paddle with your, in between your elbow and your lat, and like paddle while you're fighting a fish, and like, you know, all kind of good stuff, you know. But, you know, to have that, option now with the pedal drives and the motors with the foot control steering and all that good stuff is just advancements in technology. It's just another tool for the trade. You know, you get people, you know, some people give a lot of flack for those motors. It's not a kayak anymore. Oh yeah. Okay. I'm a kayak angler, not a kayak paddler. That's the way I see it. I do paddle my kayak a lot in the back marsh, but you know, if I got something to extend my range and to make it easier on me, I'm going to take advantage of it for sure.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So when you ended up getting in that kayak there, you know, you ended up, that increases, you know, you have more areas you can go to now instead of waiting on a buddy to invite you to fish and all that. Now you could branch out on your own and everything, and just, you know, that it's a pretty diverse fishery over there. Just like you said, we were talking before the show, you got reefs, you got docks and piers, you got bulkheads, you got a lot of tidal influence, you know, some flats further south, some different stuff you can fish. So talk about the fishery down there. You know, since you started kayak fishing over the years, what have you seen change or evolve, you know, fish numbers, quality of fish, and then kind of go in on that kind of versus the more pressure and all that kind of stuff? Because I noticed that, you know, just like Florida is now in Georgia too, they're starting to come around and be a little more conservation minded and kind of look at their limits again.
Right.
So I was just, from your perspective, what have you seen in the fishery there?
As the state, the population's grown, then that's just going to translate into more fishermen.
Yep.
And you see it on the water, you know, even the pandemic itself, yeah. I've never seen so many new boats, new kayaks on the water. You know,
true.
People don't know what they're doing either, but that's another topic. But
that's a whole nother story. Yeah.
But yeah, the pressure's definitely
more pressure,
greater. So, you know, up in my area, the flounder is one of the more noticeable fish that has been in decline. And so we have a season now where I think it's mid-October to mid-November. You can't keep a flounder at all. And they also reduce the limit from 10 to 5 fish. And the minimum length is now 14 inches. And I think it's going to make a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Just those different regulations alone.
It will. They had changed hours to where you couldn't gig for a month and a half in like November to the middle of December. But last year you couldn't keep them, period. You couldn't, even on a conventional tackle, you couldn't keep them. And then they dropped the limit to, you know, it's still 5, but they increased the size limit to
16.
Uh-huh.
So they've made some changes, but I've caught a lot of flounder this year. And believe it or not, I'm catching a lot of them on a high strike chatterbait.
I believe it. That's a great bait for the reds and the flounder.
Oh, yeah. You slow know, rolling vibration. It on the bottom, that vibration, they come on up mm-hmm. and crush it. Yeah.
Yeah.
As long like, there's not a whole shell around.
Yeah, it's expensive lure to lose, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But, and the reds, their numbers are, I think, have more gradually declined, but it's not the numbers that we used to have in years mm-hmm. gone by, but they just actually just beginning September 1st,
yeah.
they changed it for that. There's different regions of the state, and in Northeast Florida, the limit is 1 and it used to be 2.
Yeah.
And the size limit's still 18 to 27, but it's now 1 fish.
One fish.
So that I think that's going to be a good move in the long run as well.
Do they have tags in Florida to keep an oversized or they do not?
No. See, oversized.
We have one tag on our license, and you can have, you know, your 3 that are 20 to 28. But if you tag one, that could be your 4th fish and it can be over 28 inches. And then you could submit to get another tag and you can have 2 of those tags a year.
I see.
But I know after our freeze, you know, a couple years ago in February, you know, the trout population definitely you could see some changes, especially in certain areas. But if you look back and you look at all the cleaning table pictures and the guides with their stringer hero shots and everything, dude, the redfish were getting hammered.
Oh yeah.
You know,
well, the organization released over 20.
Yeah,
you probably heard
Dave
of that.
Flat. I've had Dave on the show before. Yep, good okay. stuff.
Well, yep. We've talked about the fact that really the bass fishermen were well, the largemouth bass fishermen were well ahead of saltwater yep. guys as far as conservation,
tournaments and everything.
You know, that started. Yep. Yeah, it started though so many years ago. But you know, if you remember, bass in the beginning, they were not doing that. And so these tournament pros would have these giant stringers of dead fish.
Yeah.
And they had a bad image. And so that's all right, we got to change this. So my dad and brother and I, we kind of followed suit with them, and we used to eat largemouth all the time. And we pretty much just quit. We let everything go.
Yeah.
And
we used to be the same way. We'd keep some and fry them up, you know, back in the day, but there's better fish out there.
Yeah, but we just followed suit, and then it was like, what do you mean? We never keep a largemouth. So now I think people are starting to realize that in the saltwater side of things, the inshore, and you know, Dave and release over 20, I think, is making a huge impact.
Yeah,
you know, on the trout and the flounder and the sheephead, are really the 3 that he concentrates and really promotes that those 3 get let go. And for obvious reasons, you know, those are the big breeders, the ones that have the good genes. So I think it's we're turning the ship. It's a takes a while to turn
a little
ship
arm
like
twisting
that.
You know, because there's uh-huh. a lot of tournaments here. You know, you know you get the kill tournaments where you just bring them in, weigh them, but then, you know, a lot of the professional you know, called tournaments, it's a live weigh in on your redfish. And even there's some of the trout events, were live weigh in, bring them in live. You know, if not, you could have pound deduction and this and that, but you know, the Saltwater Legends did some events this year where they would, kind of like the, MLF does with the weigh with a scale, and they have to video it and they submit it. Uh-huh. And it gets submitted with that weight teared to zeroed out, and then they weigh the fish and it gets submitted. And that's how they were submitting their trout this year, catch and release. And that was pretty cool. That's Chad Petterick that did that. That Saltwater Legends. That was pretty cool to see that, especially after the freeze, you know, the trout got hit pretty
that's
hard.
A great idea.
Yeah. But you know, the CPR side of things, it's like, you know, as a kayak bass angler, you know, I was versed in that already, you know, to, you know, your 5 fish, you measure them, you let them go. But you try to run a CPR event for saltwater, and it's like, man, it's like getting a brain freeze.
You want to do what?
You want to do what? Sometimes, you know, and there's been some. We have one coming up. We have a mixed species, a multi-species event coming up. You get to fish for redfish on the first day. It's your best three redfish, 18 to 32 inches is the slot. Get a fish for 8 hours, and then you submit your three fish. Then you go and fish on Lake Bass Drop the next day. You catch your five bass, minimum 12, and then your aggregate total of both species is your winner, you know, the top three. So it's going to be pretty cool. Stuff like that, but you got to like, man, oh, it's CPR. I don't want to do CPR. You know, we have the KBF redfish series that turned into kayak saltwater series, which then you had some issues with people putting stuff under the fish to raise them up. And it made them like, if you had a 28 and a quarter inch fish, you could put a sponge or something underneath it to raise it, and it would get it under 28.
Shorten
under 27 is what it was. 26.75 was your biggest fish. But yeah, there's some of that going on and this and that. And it's like, you know, man, if you got a cheat to win like a couple hundred bucks, that's asinine.
Yeah, that's pitiful. Right.
Very much so. Very much so. Oh, man. Yeah, we could dive in that wormhole for a while.
Oh, I know.
But yeah, but back to the where we started there about the fishery there in Northeast Florida and all that. It is good to see, you know, some conservation minded, you know, outlook and input coming into play in the fishery. That's a good thing everywhere.
Yeah. I would say our Northeast Florida fishery is pretty healthy. Yeah. You know, there's other parts of the state that have some, you know, red tide issues,
real issues. Yeah. Bigger issues.
Serious. Yeah. Indian River, you know, with problems they've had over the years. You know, knock on wood, we've had a pretty healthy fishery. We have a algae bloom in the river almost every year. We actually haven't really had a serious St. John's River. We haven't really had it this year, and we're probably almost past the time where it's gonna, you know, we're gonna turn the corner with cooler weather, and that'll dissipate any chance. So it's
St. John's. Fun fact: it's the only river in the United States that flows from south to north.
Exactly. I think the only other major river in the world is
Amazon. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Fun tidbit right there.
Exactly. So, yeah, the St. John's River, I'm fishing it more. I'm really close to a boat launch into the St. John's River. And during the pandemic, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but working from home during the pandemic, I would get up and get out there before daylight, fish from like 6:15 to 8:15, and I could be home in front of my computer by 8:30. And she's like, "What do you think you're doing?" But I could catch fish and be back and at work. I may not smell so good, but I'll be back at front of my
I've done that
computer.
I've gotten on the water at leave the house at 1, get on the water at about 10 till 2 and fish till 4, and then go to work. Luckily we got like a locker room and showers, like shower rinse off or whatever. But yeah, if I was in like a month long or something trying to upgrade some fish, you know, I'd do that if the bite window and the salooner periods lined up or something, it was just gonna be awesome. Or if it's just the right conditions, and I know them big trout, they're going to be set up. Oh, I'll sacrifice some sleep real quick.
Oh yeah, you catch up with sleep later.
Oh yeah, I'll catch up with that for sure. So yeah, speaking of trout, yeah, you want to recount some of your prized moments there, your most memorable catches. Pretty good ones on file, and that on mine.
Yeah, I've been blessed. I've caught two over 30, and the first one was definitely the most special. The first one I caught on the 17 MR, that's the mirrored Mirrodin, the Miralure Mirrodin. And then the second one I caught on the Double D, Texas Custom Lures Double D. And it was the Truth color.
Oh, the Truth.
The Truth color, you know, Chris Bush's color.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was neat. But I have to say, one of the, besides those two, probably one of the most special moments was seeing my youngest son catch a 30-inch trout with me. And he caught one, I think it was about 2 years ago. And listen to this. The funny thing about this is he has probably caught before that one maybe a half a dozen trout in his life.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I gave him a hard time then, and I still do occasionally, that when he caught it and I came over to his kayak and I measured it, we took a picture, let it go. I said, "You just caught a once in a lifetime fish." And no reaction. He's like, "Okay, well that's great, you know." And I said, "No, Connor, no. Let me tell you again what you just caught."
Yeah.
And
a unicorn in the water.
right. But he's we'd still joke about that.
Yeah. Oh man, that's super cool. What did he catch that one on?
That was a 17MR as well.
17MR. Yeah. What pattern on that one?
His was a trout pattern.
The trout.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which you can't go wrong with the trout pattern.
Can't go wrong with a baby trout pattern. Nope. Cannibalistic and opportunistic is the speckled trout's.
Exactly.
MO.
those were the ones that come to mind. There's a couple catches in tournaments that are special, but as far as outside of tournaments, those are the ones that
feed into some of those. What do you got on that side? You know, we are going to get into the tournament talk anyways. We'll just feed on into it.
All right. Sounds good. I guess on the tournament side, we have about a half a dozen in-person kayak fishing tournaments every year. We've had probably a few more at other times, but it's pretty much averaging half a dozen kayak tournaments. Either they're solely kayak tournaments, or there are one or two that have a kayak division and a boat division.
Yeah.
And the premier trout tournament put on by Craig Van Brocklin is a boat and a kayak tournament strictly for speckled trout. And he does it where on the boat side, it's the three fish aggregate, and that's by weight since they're bringing in the fish, to a weigh-in site, and they do let the fish go after their weight. But for the kayakers, it's a CPR, catch, pitcher, release aspect, and it's just longest trout, period. One category, no aggregate, just one category.
Just one fish.
Just one fish. And I've been really blessed to have won that the last 2 years in a row. And I got third in it about 4 years ago, but the last 2 years I've won it.
What time of year is that one? Is that one in the April, May?
Funny you ask. He's moved it around a couple times. Okay. He's skipping this year to move it again. Last year it was October, I believe, but this year he's going to move it to May. So he's skipping 2022 and it'll be in 2023.
All right. I'm going to put that on the calendar.
Yeah. Come on over.
Keep me in check on that. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah. It's fun. And it's,
you might have a shadow.
That's fine. I get a couple shadows.
I'm sure everybody's like, where's Sandy launching at?
But that's all right. We all, it's a good,
the camaraderie
of guys that we have. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yep.
But getting back to that tournament, so it benefits Heroes on the Water. So great.
Oh, cool. Yep. Great cause.
Beneficiary that we raise money for. And with that tournament, so the one 2 years ago, where I launched was probably a dozen of us lined up. And, some tournaments, it's lines in the water at a certain time, which means that you can take off and
get set up on your spot.
Get set up. And this one though was launch and leave at a set time. So it was, you know, the Indy 500 yeah. takeoff. Oh, yeah. But anyway, so that was kind of discouraging. But I did hit one of my spots that I had luck with, and the old 17MR did the trick. And it wasn't any special, you know, difficult fight or anything. It was textbook. But I think that one was, let's see, that was 26 and a half that year, I believe, and got first place in that. And then this past year, had it again. He switched it up last year, though, and it was, you could launch anytime, but lines in the water were at a set time. Mm-hmm. So I got to my spot that I'd had the most recent success in, and I ended up catching two really good ones, one 25 and three quarters, and one, I think it was the 26 and a half that year. And I won with that one that I caught that one on the Spook Junior bone colored. And I caught the second one on the 17MR. And the second would have been second place had Craig allowed one person to win first and second. But
right, for sure.
Anyway,
dang.
So that was really, cool right there. That was an awesome day. So that was a good memory.
Yeah, for sure. That one's etched in the mind pretty good right there.
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine. And you talk a lot, you know, because I did want to talk baits also, but seems like that 17MR, you know, you're pretty confident with that in your hand, huh?
I am. And I wasn't, you know, forever. I had some other guys really encourage me to stick with it, because coming, especially from the bass world, largemouth bass is like, what is this suspending bait? I mean, you throw it in and it hardly does a thing. I'm used to, you know, rattle traps and lip baits, you know, lip jerk baits. I said, what in the world is this? But they told me what to do, and I stuck with it and started catching fish. And it's really probably about my favorite go-to lure. You know, if it's deep water, obviously I'm not going to fish it, but in most of the water that I fish, it's my go-to year round.
That and the the double D, the double D people are like, well, what am I supposed to do with it? Well, what aren't you supposed to do with it? Just burn it, reel it in, make like two, three cranks, and then pause it. Two cranks, pause. One crank, pause. Twitch, twitch, pause. Twitch, twitch. Bam. And you know where it does work really well? That pistachio one and the white one over submergent hydrilla for bass.
Oh, there you go. I'll have to give that a try.
Hammer that thing.
Awesome.
Especially the big one, the XL, the big, big one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. They will come up and crank it. Yeah.
I'll give that a shot.
It's pretty cool. They about ripped the rod out of your hand just like a trout does, too, when they hit it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the neat things. I'm getting a little bit off track, but with the advent of social media and what you're doing with podcasts. So Chris Bush and the Speckled Truth, I would have never known about a double D in half the things that they talk about, because I'm in Florida and you guys are in Texas.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's so cool to be able to compare what you guys do, what we do, and try techniques that work in your estuaries, try them over in my area. And I just, you know, I buy lures all the time online from, you got the Waterloo hat on. I buy lures from Waterloo.
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad you're supporting that shop. Johnny's, they support me. They support the pod. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All over Good the place.
Stuff. Good stuff. And that's crazy because, you know, Jimmy was, you know.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal. Develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping, MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
He brought in that the Texas Custom Lures, like, from the get-go, when they started doing their custom corkies, and they were like, you know, big girls aren't colorblind, and they always had them crazy colors, and I was always the first, boom, I was always in there, Jimmy, what you got? And then I was like one of the, you know, like as a kayak guy, you know, being hooked up with Waterloo is, you know, I've always been good with Jimmy because he knows I'm going to put them rods through some work because, you know, the way you fight redfish and trout, you know, you got to go around the bow and they get behind you and you're, I put them rods in some crazy positions, and if I can't break them, they're going to hold up. But when we got them double Ds in, and I was like, man, the first time I threw them, I was like, oh, man, this bait's magical.
Especially it is.
For over the potholes, over the flats for redfish also. And, you know, you get them. Sometimes the redfish are just, they'll chase a bait, and then you'll see them turn away at the kayak. You're like, well, what? But, you know, with that double D, you can just burn it, and then you just pause it, and then they don't know what to think. They're like, ah, bam, you know, and they just smack the fool out of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love throwing those, especially over some, you know, shell, you know, 2.5 foot, 3 foot deep, little transition edges, you know, mud and shell.
I like them. It seems like when the Spook Junior or the Skitter Wall – the Skitter V, those are my go-to walk the dog topwaters. When they short strike or they're just rolling
it, just flicking it out of the water, flick, 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 flick.
Yeah, I'll move to the double D and they'll demolish it.
They'll straight kill it. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. They love them things. Love them. Yeah, that bait's high on my confidence list for sure once I got – you know, got it dialed in and everything, just like the wake bait for redfish. I'll throw that thing all day if I can.
Yeah, I need to use those more. Those little
dabbled with juniors, them. Man. Shell over shell pads, man. It's been on them things. That gold one. I done said too much. Nobody listen to what I say. No, I post all the time about them things, man. Them things, they're money. But, you know, if they're going to eat topwater, though, I'm going to throw it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'm going to throw that holographic bone one knocker. I can't get enough of that one. I like the tone on those. I've drawn a lot of big trout up with that bait, the one knocker, just that deeper tone and everything. And then sometimes if you want to make them mad, you know, that she-dog of, little higher pitch and stuff, you know, depends on what the fish want. You know, sometimes they want the junior, sometimes they want the one knocker, sometimes they want the she dog, or sometimes they want a jerk bait. I mean, it's just, oh, it can get crazy sometimes, you know, just like Chris just had, you know, Mike Herman on from Donkey Bay Swim Baits, you know, they kind of letting the cat out of the bag with all the glide bait for the trout, which, you know, being a bass fisherman, throwing big swim baits, it was, you know, been part of the game. You know? Mm-hmm. And you know they're talking about, you know, the glide baits for the trout and everything. I'm like, man, y'all need to be quiet with that. I don't get it. But no, it's definitely a black hole you can get lost in for sure.
Oh yeah,
and you can spend some money on some of the nicer ones for sure.
You sure can.
But yeah, mirror lures. Texas Custom Lures, you know, all the corkies and all that kind of stuff there for the time of year. You can't beat any of them. Not at all. All right. But anything else you want to add as far as the baits go?
Well, I was going to mention before we left the tournament topic.
Yeah.
There's a really cool tournament that we have here. It's called the Inshore Extreme Challenge, and it's like no other tournament we have. I've never heard of anything like it even. But Tony Hart and his wife put it on, and it's one category, and it's illegal slam trout, red, flounder, aggregate length of all three in those legal in the regulations for each one. Huh. And so up until the flounder regulation change, you know, it was recently 10 flounder, 12 inch minimum. And then you had the red, two reds. To 28, and then five trout with one over 19 could count. And so think about it, one category, he had a 6 p.m. cutoff or weigh-in deadline. So it was, you know, longer than most. All day.
Yeah, 12 hours so, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. So your strategy, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to hope I get, boom, 10 flounder and then move on? Or am I going to go for an early morning trout bite
yep.
Mm-hmm. And then move to – and a lot of people, including myself, we would move, pick up and move from one – body of water to another, which is perfectly legal.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's the most fun one we have because of the extra challenge that's involved in it. And just the strategy and what you're going to do. When do you decide to pick up? Do you try to upgrade that next trout, or is it time to move on and go to flounder? So
that a lot of the mindset and all that comes into play on those. It's like, you don't want to second guess yourself, or maybe you didn't get that third or fourth or fifth trout and you're like second guessing yourself, man, I should have moved. And see, that's when it all comes into that mind games. You
oh
know?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
What, did that spin off or no, there was a giant tournament they used to have there years back. What was the something?
Yeah. That was the Jack's Kayak Classic.
Yep.
And that was right after I got into kayak fishing that, I'll say that was the first tournament that I entered. And that was 2015. So right after I tried kayak fishing, and then I bought my new kayak, then I entered the tournament with my buddies that were already doing it for years. Yes. And I'll tell you what, you know, people say that we learn the most from, you know, the hard times. Well, I quit at about 10:30 that morning. The wind was blowing, I don't know, like 20 miles an hour, you know, typical tournament day. I quit and I called my brother on the way home and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, I'm going home. And from that moment on, it was like, okay, you're never going to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And
fish till the last minute.
Yeah, so I learned a lot about myself from that tournament, and you know, I said I always think of I'm a Gator fan, so I always think of Tim Tebow's my big favorite Gator.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you remember his Ole Miss speech after they lost to Ole Miss in 2008, and they were hoping to win out that year. And they lost Ole Miss, the Gators did. And he had a speech and he said, "You will never see anyone work harder than me. And our team will work harder than anybody." And that's kind of what I said to myself in the tournament fishing. I said, I may not be the best, but no one's going to work harder than me from this point on.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm not the best fisherman around, but I go all out on the water, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I hardly take a stop.
A break.
I eat on the run.
I eat while I'm fishing. That's what how do I put it? It's, you will not catch 100% of the fish without that lure in the water. You know, it's like more time that bait's in that water, there's the more chance you got to land the right fish. You know.
Exactly. I mean, I'd like to know how many times a day I throw. I bet you it's close to 1,000.
It's probably over 1,000. It's basically burning a spoon on flats or burning a wake bait back. And I mean, there's a lot of times I'll take particular areas and I'll just throw to one little ambush point and I'll work that top water about, 10, 15 foot, and then I'll burn it in. I'll run it on the 8-3-1 Daiwa Coastal, SB. TW150. So I'll burn it on in and then throw back in, and sometimes I work it all the way back depending if I see a wake coming or something, there's different things here and there, but I'm good with sight casting and picking up on,
nervous water and redfish blowing up and all that. But I'm not one to just to sit idle. I'm gonna be blind casting because you never know that freaking 9-pound slot could have passed right by it without knowing it was there.
Yeah, yeah, too many times. You. I don't stop throwing.
Nope. Same. I will keep at it, grind till the last minute. Always. Uh-huh. Don't give up. That's some of that hard-headed Marine Corps coming out of me.
There you go.
Do not quit. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you're there in Northeast Florida, St. John's. Just like we were talking about, there's all those lakes over there that feed off of that river system. Transitioning back to freshwater after being on saltwater, is there anything you can add to somebody, you know, new out there that might, you know, either or jump, transition from fresh to salt or salt to fresh back and forth, you know, some kind of baits that are similar or something that you can use on each one?
Yeah, I mean,
you can kind of dive into that real quick.
Sure. If you're already doing artificial, like in bass fishing, you're going to have no problem moving over, you know, your hard plastic jerk baits, they're going to transition perfectly. Spinner baits, you know, they're going to catch the reds, the flounder, just the same. So yeah, you're going to have no problem using the same lures.
Yep. The walking baits, the top water, the poppers. Straight hammer the redfish.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth fresh to salt almost on a weekly basis,
yeah.
And sometimes I don't even retie and catch the fish on the same Spook Junior that I caught the trout on. I catch the bass on, you know.
And you'd be surprised when bass hit that old white with a red head.
I know. Yeah,
he'll still eat it.
So yep. Yeah, that's I think the preparation of or the upbringing of being a bass fisherman gave me maybe a leg up I not been doing that to transition to saltwater. Yep. Definitely.
Same here, because it was me that was, you know, I was the one to experiment even at a young age with my granddad, my uncles, and all them on the water. Is that, you know, I have that old Daiwa Magforce old pistol grip lightning rod out there throwing a crankbait, catching trout on a Fire Tiger crankbait. Uh-huh. And that old man stingray grub on a big old red jig head, you know, white with a red tail. What kind of action did that thing have? That old beaver tail looking thing. Who knows what, but it caught fish. You know, it flat out caught fish. That old chartreuse glitter one. I used to wear them out on that thing. But the old the Bagleys, the Bangalores. There's a golden one with black stripes. Dude, the redfish would kill that thing up there in Georgia. I don't know what it was about that one, but they sure ate that old, you know, floating balsa jerk bait, you know, just kind of twitch on the top. It just kind of darted around on the top. It didn't really dive too far. Man, I'd like to get my hands on some of them old school Bangalores, man. Them things.
Yeah, you're going way back.
Things were money. But yeah, like, you know, redfish, they have some bad, they have some tendencies like bass, you know, they like to go crazy and blow up on top water and all that good stuff. But yeah, they'll eat frogs in the marsh too. They'll come up on some popping frogs when you can't put nothing else in front of them. Flukes, double fluke, donkey rigs on the flats.
Yeah, same stuff that works for bass. That's right.
Oh yeah, chatter baits, just like I was talking about, them little eye strike chatter baits with just the jig head and the blade. Put your little paddle tail or a little shrimp imitation on there, and it'll straight hammer them. Extra vibration for when the water's dirty. Yep, good stuff. How is it down there, up there in Jacksonville? I know our water up there where I grew up is a little more marsh. More like mud marsh, you know, a little dirtier, a little more stained. Y'all have some areas that stay pretty clean, right?
I wouldn't say clean,
not super clean, not Texas flat. So.
And there's some dredging happening out towards the Mayport area as well.
Yeah.
So that can create some extra visibility issues, but
right. Yeah, and y'all have bigger, way bigger tide swings than we have over here too.
That's true.
Yeah, there can be a feat in itself right there, figuring out where to launch and crawl through the mud and all that good stuff.
Yeah, in a kayak, yeah, you can definitely you got to be careful. You got to watch where you're going and watch the tides. I haven't been stuck in the mud yet, but I know most everybody that I know, they have. So you got to be careful with that.
Well, that's the cool thing. You know what's coming back in. Most of the time, you get four tides a day there, and they're swing, you know. It moves pretty good. Y'all get some pretty good current over there, too, for sure.
Yeah, there is. And that's a, you know, you can go from, you can, a lot of guys fish downtown. Downtown Jacksonville has good, big speckled trout fishing. And wow. You've got some real current moving through that area.
Yeah.
And it's
and in industrial in the wintertime, I bet that can get good, that deeper water on that structure. Yeah.
You just you have to know what you're doing. It's not recommended maybe for a kayak. Maybe it's you know, good boat place.
Good boat place, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's good fishing.
Oh man, that's cool. All right. Well, we're gonna roll into this kind of towards the end of these podcasts. I like to do a pick three. Where we, you know, you get three setups to take, target a specific species, and you, you know, rod, reel, line, lure. What's tied on, what you're throwing.
Okay.
So I know you like the trout, but I was going to throw you a loop, and then we're going to go with redfish on this one. So pick three. What you going to have?
Well, I'll start with top water. Yeah, even for reds, it's top water. So Spook Junior, Skitter V, Skitter Walk.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
After your bait, when you see that weight coming at them, maybe they miss once or twice, you know, with their mouth on the bottom.
Yeah.
And they keep coming, and your lure's getting closer and closer to your kayak. And you're going, please get those hooks.
Yeah. Please eat it. Please eat it.
So I would say top water. Then probably after that, I would.
What are you going to throw it on? Are you going to throw it on a bait casting reel, or did you throw spinning reels?
Both. I would probably, I do top water, a heavier top water. I'll throw on a Falcon Coastal with a loose speed spool inshore primarily. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably what I would use. Maybe 10 pound braid, 15 pound fluorocarbon leader. Okay. I try to go as light on the line as I can under the conditions wherever I am.
Longer cast too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So try to go that route. Probably after that I would go with the spinner bait. We talked about that, like a Redfish Magic. I like to put a scented tail on, like a gulp swimming mullet.
Yes.
I like to make sure there's some scent, so give me a good chance of a flounder in addition to the reds. Sure.
Yeah, scent and flash and vibration. Yep.
Exactly. And then maybe the last would be just your standard jig, like an iStrike jig with a paddle tail, or there again with that gulp swimming mullet.
Mm-hmm.
Or we Fish Bites is here, made here in St. Augustine. They have a similar product that has really good scent that the reds and the flounder like.
I've heard those are. Those do pretty well scent wise too. Pretty cool.
But on the spinning side, I try to go light. I don't use anything higher. I like the Daiwa Fuego.
Uh-huh.
And 2500 is the biggest reel size I use, 25 and 1000, and usually 8 and 10 pound braid. You know, I rarely go higher than that unless I really have to.
So. Yeah, you can throw those lighter, 16th ounce jig heads or those little
Savage or Chase baits, those little crusty crabs. I was talking about those with somebody. Those sheephead really like those, you know, and they're those, you know, 5, 6, 7 pound sheephead on a 1000 series reel is pretty dang fun.
Oh yeah.
And they're good table fare too. It's another, another fish you can add, you know, to the table. They're pretty white, delicate, sweet meat on them, man. And, whew, they cook up real nice.
They are good. No doubt.
They are. All right. Well, we're going to roll into this. We do the pick three and then we also do the quick five. It's just a yes or no, maybe so, just one or the other. Bucks or Jags?
Jags.
Redfish or trout?
Stick with them.
Stick with them. Redfish or trout?
Trout.
All right. Shell or structure?
Pier? Structure.
Okay. Gators or bulldog?
Oh, yes, you already know that answer now.
We know that one. Gators. All right. And then here's one for you. A sloppy Joe or a hot dog?
Ooh. I'll say hot dog.
Okay, cool. I'd have to go on Sloppy Joe on that one myself, though.
that's a hard decision there.
That's a pretty tough one. Especially, well, how about a hot dog with the Sloppy Joe meat on it? That actually
there you go.
That'd be pretty good right there.
That's a good compromise. Melted
cheddar. I think I could do that one. I think that'd be pretty dang good.
Oh, yeah.
I think I might have to try that next time I have some leftover Sloppy Joes. That'd be pretty cool.
That sounds good to me.
You know, because we're big on you know, slaw dogs up there. You know, we have that place in Brunswick called Willie's Weenie Wagon. If you're ever up that way,
okay,
stop on in there because they will relish your bun. That's what it says on their hats. But they got a pork chop sandwich there. That is money.
That sounds good.
You go there and then go to St. Simon's and go visit my buddy Griffin at Southern Soul Barbecue. And then Frosty's Grill and Shake, too. Frosty's Grill and Shake. Used to be the old Tasty Freeze, and it was at Dairy Queen. It's down from the pier in the village there. They got a lot of cool little burgers and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, St. Simon's, man, it just got so many restaurants. You know, it's a little tourist trap. A lot of condos, a lot of houses, a lot of money over there. A lot of restaurants.
Yeah,
pretty cool
good.
Area. But y'all got some good stuff over there, too, in Jack's Beach. You know, Jack's Beach kind of did some. Got some stuff, you know, Taco Lou and
Angie's Subs. They sponsor a lot of our tournaments.
That's cool. That's awesome to have a sub sponsor. You get fed and stuff too at the end of the tournament.
Man, well, let me mention real quick.
I was gonna say any shout outs or thank yous or don't fish my spots or whatever. No, go ahead. Go ahead, take the mic, man.
Yeah. The Flounder Pounder is an annual tournament we have put on by a good friend of mine, Chip Davis, and it's to benefit Jacksonville School for Autism coming up next month. And this is 13th, like I mentioned, and he's on track to raise a total now of $1 million for the school. Ooh. So he puts awesome. Heart and soul into that tournament, and lots of fun. I typically fish it every year with some with a friend of mine that has a nice boat, and so wanted to, and let me give a shout out to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Yes, sir.
Amen. And also my wife who puts up with all my fishing and shenanigans. So and my kids that put up with me too. So
yeah,
I love them all.
Oh yeah, no doubt, man. Well, dude, I mean, it was great to catch up with you and actually talk to you via stream. You know, we've been following each other on social media and stuff, and you know, I'm always a fan of somebody else out there grinding and chasing them big trout too. So, you know, man, one of these days I'm gonna have to get over there.
I already told that to
a couple of other guys. I've had a couple other guys from over there on already, a couple of them Duval guys, Johnny Carr and Rashad and all them on there. So yeah, I said, I'm going to make my way through. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to ask Sandy to come on the show. So, man, I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on and chatting with us on Chasing the Tide here, man. And just like everybody else out there, you know, we wouldn't have this without the listeners and everybody that supports the show. Thanks again to Waterloo and Trujador & Co. And, y'all check us out on all the podcast platforms. Type in Paddle and Fin and look for Chasing the Tide. We're also on Waypoint on that app, and you can pull us all up, videos, YouTube, whatever. Type in Paddle and Fin, and you'll find it. But, yeah, man, good stuff. I appreciate you coming on, first-time guest, first-time podcast.
Dustin, I appreciate you having me.
Pretty good. Yes, sir. Hang tight there. We're going to roll this outro, and we'll close this down. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures, your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.